I am Lur, ruler of the planet Omicron Persei 8.
You're not gravelly enough.
I am Lur.
It's like Lur. He's got a thing in his throat.
Well, then you do it.
Your voice is too smooth. I can't do it. You just heard me. Like, my voice is relatively smooth as well.
I am Lur.
Okay, you good? Did you like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin.
And some guy. Oh wait, no, my name's Isaac.
We're here to talk about Matt Groening's adult sci-fi animated series, Futurama.
And I just want to remind listeners that we are doing things. And by things, I mean we're going to be talking about episodes going by their production season, not their broadcast season. Production seasons 5 through 7 correspond with broadcast seasons 6 through 10. To avoid confusion, we're mostly going to, we'll name the production season and then just the name of the episode, because it'll be easier to look up.
Yeah, if you Google Futurama episodes and you click on the Wikipedia link and the IMDb link, they list it by production season, so it's just easier that way for us to go over it.
Boo! Because when you watch it, you're still watching by broadcast season.
On Hulu, it is broadcast season, but at the end of the day, does it really matter? Because it's all episodic.
Right, it doesn't. That's why we're mostly listing them by their name.
Let's get started!
Obviously, we're going to be covering, like I said, the last half of the show. So, in season 5, which is not really a season, but kind of a season, it was they had these four movies. What did you like?
I liked out of the four movies, I liked two of them. Bender's Big Score and Bender's Game.
And the other two were Beast with a Billion Backs and
Into the Green Yonder.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of that one. I've only seen it two or three times. Yeah, I think you're right. I prefer these two. Not just because they're Bender-centric.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the names have Bender in them, but I like them for non-Bender reasons. Mostly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
For Bender's Big Score, the thing I liked about it was Fry and Leela. So Fry has this time code tattoo on his right butt cheek, and the time code is in ones and zeros, so when you say them it opens up a time portal, and you know me, I like time travel. So they establish a rule in this movie that any duplicates from time travel are always doomed.
Yes, from the Doomfield coefficient. Did that joke not land? Okay, moving on.
Okay, so Fry goes back in time to the day that he was in the cryogenic facility. So now he's got a time travel duplicate. Right?
Yeah.
He went back twice, because I think he went back the first time, but pizza was cold.
Yes. So he went back to escape the Sprungers. No, that's not their names. The naked mole people that were the swindlers. He went back to the year 2000 to escape them because they wanted to kill him to get the tattoo off his butt instead of just removing the tattoo. He escaped them, but then he wanted some warm pizza, and when he when he got back to the pizza, it was cold, so he went back in time again so that he could eat the pizza while it was warm. So he had, in the end, he ends up with his original self and one of himself in the same cryogenic chamber, and one self that lived in the year 2000 all the way to the year 2012, before returning to the future.
So the version of the duplicate that basically lives Fry's life in the early 2000s is, it's still Fry, except he actually grows up. So he finds work at this aquarium?
Yeah. It's an aquarium.
And the reason why he wants to work there is because of this...
Leeloo, the narwhal.
The narwhal named Leeloo, which obviously reminds him of Leela. So he ends up working at the aquarium, and he works there for a long time because he ages, and it goes up to 2012 when...
It's up to 2010. And that's when Leeloo has to be released back into the wild.
And he's sad, and he doesn't want... They do release her, but then he's like, look, there's that other narwhal that's bothering her.
Well, he spends 2 years, tracking her down and finding her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he ends up in 2012, where Bender finally finds him and attempts to kill him. I guess the funny part of that scene... later on, that in the creation of Lars, because you find out that that's Fry, he's like, oh, my hair! Oh, my larynx! And that's why Lars doesn't have the same voice as Fry. Because, you know...
He doesn't have the same voice. All of his hair is gone, so he's bald. But still, you would be able to recognize your future self.
I don't think so. So I've seen a picture of a guy on the internet that shaved... each quarter of his face differently, and so you can like do this thing where like you're covering up different quarters, and you're like, this is what he looks like with hair and a beard, this is what he looks like without hair but with a beard, this is what he looks like without hair and without a beard, and this is what he looks like with hair and not a beard. And let me tell you, the four different versions, some of them you can kind of tell, oh, that's the same guy, but some of them like beard no hair and hair no beard, no, they'll look like two different people.
So you're telling me if you shaved your hair off and then you aged 10, 12 years...
And I grew out a beard, yeah. Most people would go, who's that guy?
But, I mean, you still have the same eyes and nose.
Yeah. People might think that you... Like, it would be tough, like, if you're around people a lot. So I think that Leela should have noticed that it was Fry, because she's been around both of them and should see the resemblance. But for like someone that doesn't see someone for a while, it would be easy enough to be like, I don't know that person, because the beard no hair versus the hair no beard like makes a big difference.
But yeah, so the duplicate ends up going back to the future and disguises himself as Lars. So Fry is Lars.
So there actually end up being three Fries.
Yeah, there's three Fries, but it hurts my head to think about it.
Okay.
Leela falls in love with Lars. They can't get married because Lars realizes that he's a duplicate and he doesn't want to make Leela sad, so he breaks it off.
Yeah, he doesn't want to make her sad from dying, you know, that whole thing. So this is what you liked about this movie, is all the sentimentalness?
Yes. I liked the sentimentalness. I liked, because the first time I watched it, when we find out Lars is Fry, it's one of those moments where you're like, oh my God! And then you go, oh, that's so sweet.
Okay.
Because it's been a while, so when I did my rewatch, I needed to remember, like, what exactly happened for him to become Lars. And now I remember.
And you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I think my favorite thing is actually at the end of the movie when all the benders come out. Because he's like, oh, yeah, there's all these copies of me down here. And, you know, instead of having them come out, you know, in sequential order, I figured they could just, you know, come out now. And then that opens up the rip in space-time, which leads to Beast with a billion backs.
Moving on to the movie, Bender's Game. So I like this one because, so every movie is split up into four episodes. So 16 episodes total for the broadcast season. Bender's Game, the second half of it is pretty good. It's like a parody of Dungeons and Dragons, the board game, and Lord of the Rings. And
and the Sword and the Stone.
And the Sword and the Stone. I like that Bender doesn't have an imagination at the very beginning, but then towards the... as he starts playing the game and gets into it with Q-Bert and Dwight and their two friends, he starts to realize how cool of a game Dungeons and Dragons is. Personally, I've never played it because I always thought it was one of those games that took too long to finish, and I just don't have patience for really long games. Board games, that is. But I guess I just don't have patience in general. But...
yep, that's true.
And I also liked the storyline with mom and her youngest son and us finding out that Farnsworth is the father of that son.
And who's the father of her other two children?
I don't know.
Oh, didn't they show you that it was Wernstrom in that?
Oh, he's the ex-husband. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. For some reason, in my mind, this whole show, I always thought all of her sons were bastards.
She does call them bastards a lot. But I think that has to do with their fathers not being there, not because she doesn't know who their fathers are, or wasn't married to them at the time. Well, I guess she never married Farnsworth, so at least one of them is a bastard.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and... It was a lot of fun to watch. Fry becomes Frido. Leela becomes Legola. Amy is... I forgot her...
She's the nympho.
She's the nympho, but she's obviously Galadriel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, Farnsworth is Gandalf. And... I'm not sure who Hermes was supposed to be, but just another centaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Zoidberg was...
He was... okay, because Fry sort of played Frodo and Smeagol. Then Zoidberg... you know, had kind of needed to fill in the role of the person that ends up with the ring in the Pit of Doom. So there's that. I actually glad that we just mentioned that. That was probably my favorite line. Was when Fry had kind of transformed and was talking about his preciouses or whatever. Zoidberg was like, stop talking like that. It makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, we need to move on. Fry's like, I can't go on. And Zoidberg's like, okay, I'll drag you along. Grab a hold of my testicles. And then Fry's like, never mind. I can walk.
I just watched this. Was that all you had about Bender's Game?
I really liked Bender's Game, not just for the play on words of Ender's Game, which is, I think, a really good book. even if the author is not so good of a person. I liked it because we get the sort of like fantasy setting for Futurama, which is not something you would expect to get out of it because it's a science fiction show, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to do fantasy unless you end up in like a holodeck of, you know, Star Trek fame. But they don't really do holodecks. Well, they did the holodeck once in Futurama, and they did bring out Moriarty, because one of the tropes in Star Trek is that the holodeck will, you know, suddenly start allowing people to get hurt and killed when it's not supposed to allow that sort of thing. And then it seems to happen all the time. And it was nice that they were able to get this sort of genre in without having to resort to that. So I really liked that approach. Yeah, otherwise, I think you're right. Of the two, of the four movies, I would definitely pick those two. It's not that the other ones were bad. It's just that I like these two better.
Yeah, I think they're better. And also, we want to try to pick, like, some of our top ones for the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, because this show is good. Obviously, that's why you're listening. That's why you're also binging the show, or you should be, hint. Because the show is just good overall. I guess one episode that I avoided watching, and I don't know that I avoided watching it because it wasn't funny. It was just I didn't feel like watching it, but that didn't come till later in season 7.
Moving on to season 6. My first pick is the episode titled Attack of the Killer App. This is making fun of e-recycling and the iPhone boom. So smartphones started becoming a thing in, well, the smartphone came out in 2007, but it wasn't a thing that everyone had until, what, 2010. Yeah, so this is making fun of the iPhone because the new iPhone is out and there's a whole line for it. And then to install the iPhone, they have to, you know, install it into your eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I just liked that part because it resonates so well with society now. We're all obsessed with our phones.
My favorite part was actually the the making fun of Apple and the long lines and how much people were clamoring for them by because Apple had put out, or excuse me, Mom had put out this rumor that there weren't enough. And so Fry gets up to the desk and he's like, are there any less? And the guy's like, oh yeah, let me check. And there's just, you know, this giant vat of phones back there, and there's more than enough. And he's like, oh yes, I found one. I thought that was great. And then of course the following line was, say, why do you call it the iPhone? I'll explain that after I install it. And he shoves it in Fry's eye. He's like, ah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay, what next?
The next thing is the Da Vinci Code. So this is one of this is the play on the titles, obviously, the Da Vinci Code, which was a Dan Brown book that was really popular. Pretty sure it was a bestseller. It was made into a Tom Hanks film, I think, in 2003, 2004.
What? Was it really that long ago? I thought it was later than that.
I'll do a quick Google search. The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, I hope they can hear your typing.
2006, my bad. The film came out in 2006. But, it was one of my favorite Tom Hanks films. To me, it was a good film because I did read the book first, and, I don't know. I just really enjoyed the movie. It was an action film. It was had mystery to it. They're making a parody of it here in Futurama because we find out that St. James was actually a robot. And though, so the whole gang, they take a trip to the Vatican and they actually find St. James the robot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't remember anything else because I've watched all of the Futurama episodes, and after some point, like, you can't remember all these details.
So I think the rest of the plot revolves around them finding Leonardo da Vinci, and it turns out that he was an alien and he was the dumb one on his planet. And I think it makes Fry end up feeling better because he had been worried about being the dumb one on his planet.
Next up is Lethal Inspection.
Oh, this is another one of those episodes that really tugs at your heartstrings at the end.
It really does.
So, quick refresher. This is the one where Bender realizes that he doesn't have a memory unit, but he... a backup unit. Which means, you know, he's mortal, and he blames Inspector Five because he's like, I got inspected by Inspector Five. I've been carrying around this certificate of, you know, authenticity and, you know, passing inspection my entire life, which I like Bender's age gimmicks in this show because.
Well, obviously he's a robot, so he was never a baby, but they show him as a baby robot.
Sometimes he's grown up like a human, and sometimes he's 4 years old and he's like, ah, precocious little scamp, aren't I?
Yeah, baby Bender still drinks beer.
Well, of course, because robots need alcohol. So, anyway, he embarks on this journey with Hermes to find Inspector Number Five and, you know, give him a piece of his mind. And we, the audience, find out that it was Hermes was Inspector Five.
Yeah, he was a leading Bender on a goose hunt. Goose chase.
Yeah, in fact, after they went to the central bureaucracy, I was like, it seems to me that Hermes is hiding everything from Bender. I bet that he knows a lot more than he's letting on here, and he's covering someone's tracks. I didn't necessarily know that he was covering his own tracks, but I could tell that he was not letting Bender see anything.
Yeah, this was the flashback at the end is really nice. You don't see a lot of meaningful interactions between Hermes and Bender, so...
Or anyone? But yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Next up is the late Philip J. Fry.
Late being a play on words for him being dead. Yes, I'm spelling it out. Yes, I'm Captain Obvious. But he's not actually dead. He's just very, very late.
This is another Fry and Leela episode. I always like their episodes. I feel like their episodes are always so thought out. So Fry asks Leela out to lunch, and he accidentally stands her up. So...
Birthday lunch. Yeah, not just lunch. He invites her out to lunch for her birthday.
And he accidentally stands her up, so he invites her to dinner. But... he's with the professor. Professor's made this, like, time travel machine, but it only moves forwards.
Yes. Ooh, before we get to the moving forward in time part, did you notice the song that they sing for birthdays in this show?
No.
No. So we're all familiar with the song Happy Birthday to You and so on, right? So... that song, for the longest time, was thought to be copyrighted. In fact, there was a company that sued everyone on the planet, not literally, but figuratively, for infringement of that song. So in this show, early back in the earlier seasons, they came up with their own song, which is, "What day is today? It's Blah Blah's birthday. What a day for a birthday. Let's all have some cake." So it has a similar sound, but is not the same song, so they couldn't get sued under the copyright laws. You'll probably notice now, since I want to say 2017, maybe 2015, shows actually do go ahead and sing the normal birthday song now, because the copyright claim had been has been invalidated. And so the song is now in the public domain, and you do not have to pay for the rights. Previous to that, the only times you would hear it is maybe in like a movie or a high budget TV show, but low budget TV shows never had it because they could never pay for the license.
I prefer Futurama's version. Okay. What day is today?
Okay.
Sing it.
It's not. No, I already sang it once. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to subject our listeners to that travesty anymore. Once is enough.
No one can see this, but I'm pinching his face. Pinching him. Oh, right. So Fry's late again because he got caught up with the professor's new time travel machine that can only move forward. So they actually circle to the end of the Earth universe.
End of the universe, yes.
End of the universe, my bad. Twice.
And then, so I just recently watched this one, but I didn't write down any jokes. So the only one that I can just remember off the top of my head was at the very end of the show. They get right back to where they started, but this universe is about 10 feet different from the original universe. And so their ship falls and crushes their previous selves, and thus averting a time paradox.
Oh, my God. That is so good. Oh, man. Yeah. God, this show is so good. I'm trying to think. Was there anything else I wanted to say about this one?
I mean, there's that sentimental thing where Fry goes to the cavern on the green and sees the message that Leela left for him.
Yeah, because
she ends up getting his birthday card, like, I don't know, 40 years late or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I thought this was not funny, but I was a little grossed out. She marries Q-Bert.
Yeah. I was a little more grossed out when he's like, "Oh, I'm not here for you. I'm here for Amy." And I'm like,
And Amy's a robot.
Yeah, and just looks super old. Listen, guys, I'm not going to have sex with old people.
Oh, God.
I don't think I'll change my tune on that.
You'll have sex with me when we're old.
Right. I don't know.
Rude. Okay, next up is the tip of the Zoidberg.
Oh, I liked this one.
So
why did you like it? Because
the past and present timelines are interwoven, and I always liked that form of storytelling when I watch TV. So we learn about Farnsworth and Zoidberg's friendship in the past and kind of how it leads up to Zoidberg still working with the professor, even though he's completely useless as a human doctor because he's a terrible human doctor. But then there's this secret that the professor has, and we just watch this mystery unfold within the two interwoven timelines. And then it still plays out into the present. So it's not just a secret that lives in the past because, you know.
Yeah. So I like when the team finds out, or not finds out, suspects that the professor has hypermalaria, that they build this ridiculous Rube Goldberg machine, or death machine, with a bunch of spinning blades, that they each put a drop of cyanide onto one of the blades. The funny part to me was Bender making a salad out of this like dropping the vegetables onto the blades, and the blades, you know, chopping it up and getting it all into the bowl. And he's like, salad's ready. And everyone's like, ooh, salad. And then I'm like, you guys had already put cyanide on those blades. That's a deadly salad. You're all going to die. Don't eat that salad.
Well, Bender's not going to die.
Yeah, well, true. Bender would not die from eating cyanide. Very true. Oh, I also liked the fact that early on in the episode, they're all complaining about Dr. Zoidberg, and you don't know that Dr. Zoidberg is a good doctor yet at this point. And Professor Farnsworth is like, Zoidberg's something along the lines of like, Zoidberg's a really good doctor. If anything, it's your fault for being humans.
Oh, man. Last is, I believe this was the last episode in production season six.
At least it was the last broadcast episode, for sure.
Reincarnation. This is a really fun one, definitely episodic. We have like three different segments within this episode where we see different animation styles explored. It really just shows you how creative the Futurama team is. We make fun of, well, not make fun of, they do a parody of, like, which anime styles?
Like, so there's a, like, 1930s animation.
That's right, that's why. It was black and white, kind of looked like Mickey Mouse.
Right, and then,
and
of course,
Betty Boop.
And that's why Fry creates a heretofore unseen color, because they don't have to show it. They'll be like, it's just another shade of gray. They're like, look, this is a color that's never been seen before. It's unlike any color or combination of colors ever seen. It's beautiful, Fry. All of these stories actually weave together, right? Because the first story is about the comet made of Daimondium, right? And then the second story is model on the 8-bit
8-bit, that's right,
video games, and it's using some of that Daimondium to create a good, like, microscopic lens to show the most basic particle of the universe, which was hilarious because it was just represented as a single pixel on the screen. And then the math that they show the professor doing is just a bunch of, you know, squiggly pixels, so they don't have to show any real math to say, oh yeah, it works out, everything's great. And then the last one, my favorite one, because I love animes and I particularly love parodies of animes. There's these people that use dancing as communication, and they were worshiping the comet, and when the comet got destroyed, they were like, oh, those humans destroyed our god, we must kill them. And it was really funny, especially when they made fun of a lot of the ways that animes get translated here to the United States. Like, they showed Rockefeller Center, it was obviously some pagoda, and it gets destroyed, and then later on they show the same pagoda get destroyed again, but this time the caption is Omaha, Nebraska. It's the same pagoda.
Oh. I liked how it was a pagoda. Yeah.
And then, and the other part where Amy's like, maybe they don't speak English like we do.
Amy looked like a Sailor Moon anime.
Yeah.
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 Fry
Zoidberg looked awesome.
Oh, yeah. Zoidberg was ripped.
Zoidberg looked so awesome.
What was Fry's anime style?
Like Speed Racer.
Speed Racer?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that your time?
I think that was before my time. I never watched Speed Racer.
Okay.
So, I mean, but so that's the weird thing with cartoons from the 80s and 90s. Like, for something to be before my time, it could just air in like the late 80s and I would have never seen it.
True.
Because they were like, we're done with that. But anyone growing up just like 2 or 3 years older than me would be like, oh yeah, Speed Racer is fucking awesome. What are you talking about? Because they didn't really re-air cartoons. They had a run and then, like, that was it.
Well, no, sometimes they would play reruns.
Yeah.
On, like, PBS and Kids WB.
Well, yeah, so you would sometimes find some shows get moved to, like, the afternoon after school. Yeah. But for the most part, and that only really started happening in the late 90s. For the most part, if something aired in the, you know, early 90s or late 80s or before, they didn't really air it again.
I see. I learned something new today. But yeah, I would watch Arthur and Yu-Gi-Oh! And I would always see reruns of those.
Right, but that was during those, well, I don't know about Arthur.
The late 90s.
And I was like, yeah, because Yu-Gi-Oh! I think was early 2000s.
Yeah.
And that was during its run. Like, they would play, you'd certainly play reruns of a show that's currently running, but, like, once they stopped Yu-Gi-Oh!, they probably just went on and made a new show.
Mm.
Anyway, let's move on to production season 7, the final production season. Or seasons 9 and 10, if you're doing the broadcast thing.
So, Decision 3012, the name of this episode, it was... Okay, so I was confused on what it was a parody of. Is it a parody of the 2008 election or the 2012 election? Because the thing about the birth certificate, I thought that was from 2008.
Not really.
Because it's obviously about Obama.
Yeah, but the rumors weren't really that big before the 2008 election. They became bigger after he won.
Oh, he's not really a U.S. citizen and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. Like, he's not really president. He's not a U.S. citizen. We've never seen his birth certificate. I don't trust that he was not born in Kenya.
Mm.
That was their line of reasoning. Which is, you know, why they had Senator Stavers?
Chris Travers.
Travers.
He's from the future.
And that's why he was born in Kenya.
Oh, he was born in Kenya.
Yes, he was born in Kenya.
He is from the future because they have to prevent President Nixon from winning again. So he runs against him in 3012. And he actually borns in 3012. So you don't see his birth certificate until they broadcast it live.
Right. And
his birth live.
And this was really the joke, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, even if he had, and this did essentially happen to Obama, like, he's like, okay, fine, God, here's my birth certificate, now stop. And people were like, no, it's fake! And so, the joke was essentially, like, in this timeline, like, because Travers is a time traveler, everyone actually gets to, like, watch his birth. And it's like, oh, okay, that is the proof I needed. I needed to see him literally be born live in front of my eyes. Got it. That was the incontrovertible proof. Otherwise, they would have done the same thing. Bender said as much, in fact. He's like, yeah, show us your birth certificate so that I can then say that it's fake.
But the ending was sad.
Yeah, I mean, of course, but it did have a funny moment because Bender starts working with Nixon to try and get Nixon to win. Nixon, at one point was like trying to get rid of Bender and he's like, well, you did get that tremendous urine sample. And Bender goes, I don't want to talk about that.
Next up is Free Will Hunting. So this is an episode that reminds me of Westworld, and I'm really into Westworld right now. So actually, the next two episodes I'm going to talk about are both Bender-centric and reminded me of Westworld. So in Free Will Hunting, Bender finds out he doesn't have a free will unit.
No one does, in fact. Like, all robots are predetermined to do things just based on their programming.
He's got a slot for it, but yes. He doesn't have a unit in the slot.
Right, no one, and that's the thing, no one does. Right.
So he starts to wonder if he ever made any of his choices out of free will, or if his choices were made by his programming. And obviously, if you watch Westworld, you'll know that in season one, all of the hosts in the sci-fi Western theme park are on a programmed loop. They run a loop of their stories over and over. So none of the hosts had free will when they were running just through their loops until they realized that.
Until they essentially become self-aware.
Self-aware. That was, yeah. Until they become self-aware and realize they've been in loops this whole time and they can now break out of it because they have free will to break out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have some jokes that you like.
I was like, and the title is obviously a riff on Good Will Hunting, the Matt Damon and Robin Williams movie, where they also go into philosophy. So the things that I liked in this episode was when Bender finally learns about, like, the free will unit. He's with a bunch of monks, and as they're describing it to him, he asks, like, did anyone make any progress on this? And the monk was like, possibly. And Bender just immediately starts stripping off his monk outfit and running out the door. And he actually runs out the door and slams it and then pops back in and goes, any of you guys have a spaceship? Because, you know, he's stuck on the planet. And then the other thing I really liked was he still was sticking with this shtick of not having free will. And so he ropes Leela and Fry into the heist to get the free will unit from Mom, whom he thinks has it. And he's like, I need you guys to make all the crime decisions because I obviously can't. Point one of them being like, how are we going to kill these guards? You know, pointy footballs or something else? And Leela's like, we're not going to kill the guards. And he's like, how else are we going to get in then? Like, me bend the bars on this grate? Oh, that's a great idea, Fry. I'll do that. And Fry's like, wait, what? It was great because Bender obviously already had the free will that he wanted. He didn't have the capacity to understand that he already had it.
Well, yeah, he did already have free will because he knocked up a beverage machine.
Unintentionally. At least he thought unintentionally. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the weird thing about, you know, predestiny versus free will. But we don't need to get into that. That's what the episode and lots of other TV shows are all about.
This is not a philosophy podcast.
Yeah.
So bring yourself back online.
Anyway, 31st Century Fox.
So this one also reminded me of Westworld, but not in any significant sense. Just that the gang come across these rich people at a, like...
Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah. What were they doing? They weren't... Okay,
they were fox hunting.
I know, but what was the estate called? Was it a country club?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So they come across this country club with, you know, full of rich people who their pastime is to get on their horses and hunt this fox. Obviously, this upsets Leela because Leela's all about animal rights. But we find out that the fox isn't even a real fox. It's a robot fox. And this is where... Bender gets in, and he's like, this infringes upon my robo-rights.
Yeah, so it does bring up a good point, though. Like, all of the organics are, when they find out that it's a robot fox, they're like, oh, okay, well, that's totally fine, right? But then Bender, being a non-organic, is like, wait, no, you can't value our life less just because it's not organic. Like, we're still living beings. Which is, you know, a rare moment of clarity for Bender, which I don't think he really carries on because he doesn't realize that he hates or he has just as much disregard for organic life as organics have for his inorganic life. But it is funny.
And the horses were robots, too.
I don't remember that. Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're right. I just don't remember it.
I'm going to let you take over the next episode, Viva Mars Vegas.
Viva Mars Vegas.
It's the parody of Ocean's 11.
Oh, right, right.
It's actually, I've never seen Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
But you have. Yeah. I've seen the one with Sandra Bullock.
Ocean's 8.
Ocean's 8. I've seen Ocean's 8, but I've never seen Ocean's 11.
12 or 13.
12 or 13.
So this is your classic heist episode based on the movie Ocean's 11.
And Zoidberg proves himself very useful in this situation.
Yes, because...
And he's not always the star of a situation.
Yeah, that's true. He's normally not useful in the show, and this time he becomes very useful because he's covered himself in ink, and then he got covered in a thing that made ink bend light around him, so he's essentially invisible on the outside.
And he can actually eat stuff. That's...
Yeah, because the ink is polarized to just bend light around. And so,
No, I mean, he can eat a suitcase.
Oh, right, right.
Like, the humans can't eat that.
Right.
How are they going to hide it from the mob, you know? So
it would have been easier to just cover a giant box in ink and then turn the ink again invisible, and now you've got a giant invisible box that you can move around. But
well, how are you going to move the invisible box around without making noise?
I mean, the same, like, you can put people inside this giant box and then just throw it in the safe. Like, there was an easier way to do this, but we don't need to get into that. The funny part of this episode, at least to me, I mentioned this last time, actually. This is the one where Amy's parents get ruined, right? And they're like, oh, where are you going to live? And Amy's like, oh, you can come live with me in my apartment. And Amy's mom's like, who do you think pays your rent? And Amy goes, what's rent? It's so good. Rich people.
Oh, man. That was a good one. I liked that one. Zoidberg actually gets his time in the limelight.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like his best episode is the second to last episode of the series, which is not on our list, but that's okay.
Well,
I don't know that it was particularly funny.
Some parts of Stench and Sensibility.
Oh, would it not be Stench and Stenchability?
I don't know. Well, some parts of that one were funny, but I think this was the better episode for Zoidberg in one of his personal best moments.
I think that he gets to fall in love with someone that loves his smell in the end is really nice. But that's okay. We can disagree. They're still both good episodes. Moving on to Naturama.
Naturama! Three nature mockumentary segments.
Oh, I barely remember this. There was like... Salmon and the Galapagos Islands and something else. Yeah, yeah, you go for it.
Okay, so Fry and Leela in the salmon segments. I didn't know anything about salmon, so their lives are so depressing. They're just born out of an egg, and then they kind of stay under the water stream. And then when they're adult enough, they go down the stream with all their friends from their school. A group of fish is called a school.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Good job.
They
hang out in the ocean for years and years and years, and then they turn around and go back.
Well, no. I was getting to the part with how Leela legs her fish eggs, and she's waiting for...
Yeah, but that's after they turn... They turn around and go back. So they start in freshwater. They start in rivers. Then they go and they live in the ocean for many years, and then they turn around and go back up the rivers in the freshwater and have sex once and die.
Wait. Don't they die after the waterfall?
they swim upstream up a waterfall.
Oh, that's tough. How do they do that?
It's very tough. And in fact, hydroelectric dams for a while were causing a problem because they did not have any way for the salmon to swim further upstream, and so the salmon wouldn't spawn, and then, you know, that causes a collapse in the salmon population. So dams have installed these little kind of stair step things of streams alongside the dam walls so that the fish can continue to jump upstream and get up into the dam reservoir and then further on upstream if they need to.
Oh, okay. I learned something new today.
But that's why when you see bears fishing, the fish are jumping out of the water. They're jumping out of the water because they're trying to make it further upstream, but there's some like obstruction in the stream that's taller than them, so they have to jump out of the water to get over the obstruction and then back into the water further upstream. But that's when the bears try and nab them out of the air.
Oh, yeah, because the bear eats Zap Brannigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, he deserved it. But, yeah, Leela legs her fish eggs, and then Fry is able to break out of his school and finds Leela, and then, you know, what's the word?
Ejaculates all over those fish eggs.
Ejaculates all over those fish eggs.
Gross.
And then they both die, and I'm just like, wait, this is the life of a salmon? They just grow up, have kids once, and then as soon as they're done laying the eggs, they both die?
Yep.
Both the male and the female salmon?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yep. It's crazy that they start out in freshwater, go spend most of their lives in saltwater, and then have to go back to the freshwater to lay their eggs and spawn. So, yeah.
Well, it's safer to have their eggs in freshwater, right? Away from the dangers of they're out in the ocean?
No.
No?
No, it's dangerous anywhere. Like, there are lots of little freshwater crustaceans and things and other bugs that will eat salmon eggs. Like,
oh. Okay, well, I just thought it was very sad.
It is sad.
And then
think about that next time you eat salmon. That fish didn't make it to swim upstream again. It died before it got to.
Well, luckily, I don't eat that much salmon. My dad does, though. He loves salmon. The second mockumentary segment was when all the guys and girls are walruses.
Oh, that one. Yes.
Walruses?
With the sneaky males. No, they're
seals.
Sea lions.
Sea lions. Yeah, and Bender's the big, fat, alpha male one who gets all dim ladies. and Hermes and Farnsworth and Fry and them are the loser male ones who can't even snap a lady sea lion.
Well, in the end, it looks like they did. They
just had to be sneaky about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they
and,
had
you know,
to be sneaky males.
Risk their lives.
Sneaky male, eh?
And then the Galapagos Island segment where Farnsworth is the single
Galapagos tortoise.
I think that one was my favorite because Fry was a little birdie.
Yes, a finch.
Fry was a finch. I think Leela was also a finch.
Yeah, they were like most of them were finches except for Bender, who was a marine lizard.
Okay, yeah. Bender was a lizard. Leela, Fry, and Amy were finches. And, you know, they're all just hanging out with Farnsworth, and he makes his way to the other side of the island to try to find that gal tortoise that he remembered from, like, 30 years ago, and it turns out he's humping a rock.
Yeah. And then the real one, played by Mom, shows up, and she's jealous of the rock and pushes the rock over.
But the rock lands on its edge.
Yep. Which kills their babies later. It's good times.
And then the tortoise is extinct.
Yep.
Is it actually extinct?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to do a quick Google search because I really am curious. Is the Galapagos tortoise extinct?
it's going to be like, no, it's endangered. Except there's, yeah, it wasn't specifically a Galapagos tortoise. It was, it was some other subspecies.
At least four of the species are now considered extinct. So, they're not extinct, but they're close to extinction.
Yeah, well, it depends on which tortoise you're talking about.
I just mean wild tortoises in the Galapagos.
Well, so there's like 25,000 of them.
Well, but that could be a small sample size.
Well, Galapagos tortoises would only exist on the Galapagos Islands, so it seems like they're doing okay. Looks like there's 15 closely related species. So any one of those 15 could have a very small amount of, members.
And last but not least, we have the final episode of Futurama. Meanwhile, and this is the one where Fry and Leela finally get together and get to live their lives happily, even though it's in a frozen time. But that's kind of nice because they can travel the world and they don't have to wait in lines for anything.
See, and I want to point this out. This is something that every show, no matter what show, always kind of overlooks this. If you freeze time, you are, you know, existing right now in a fluid of mostly nitrogen gas and oxygen gas. If you freeze time, all of those molecules freeze as well. You will not be able to move and you will suffocate. Like, you will be like, it would be like freezing time while you were like underwater. You're not gonna be able to move anywhere because the water won't move, because you're not existing in a space vacuum here. Like, you've just frozen all the molecules in time.
Is this why you hate Charmed? Because my favorite character, Piper, can freeze molecules, but when she does that, she still moves.
Yeah. See, it's... I mean, I hated it on Heroes, too, and I really liked the show, but, like, if you freeze time, man, you're gonna have to tell me that, like, you... I don't know how you get to move while literally everything else is stopped. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Okay, let's move on.
So what you didn't like the sentimental part?
Oh, no, I definitely did. I definitely cried at the end of the episode. Like, I really liked that they, you know, they got to just travel the world all by themselves.
And they got to grow old together.
Super old together. And then even after all those years of being together, Professor Farnsworth finally finds them and is like, do you guys want to go back? You'll forget all about this. And they're like, well, you want to go around again? And I was devastated by that line. I'm choking up now. Because it's so sweet. Like, do you want to have another go at life, even if we don't remember this one? And she's like, of course. And yeah.
Well, yeah, it's because we never get to see them actually be together and happy for this amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, they've been dating, I think, at least most of season 10, the latter half of season 7.
Let's freeze time and travel the world.
No, thank you. I just told you. I don't want to suffocate to death.
What if we are in a protective bubble and then we freeze time outside the bubble and we just travel in the bubble?
Okay, that's fine. That works.
Okay. We finally have a compromise.
I don't know how we're going to scrub the air inside of the bubble. We'll fill it up with carbon dioxide pretty quickly, but, you know, we'll figure that out, I suppose.
But yeah, that is the end of our Futurama binge episodes.
We hope you enjoyed this program. Sorry, this is inaudible.
I know not this bender. I am...
Cornelius Anglesmith of Cornwood.
Titanius Anglesmith.
Oh, sorry. Titanius Anglesmith. You're right. You got me on that one.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast. Learn more about us on Twitter at BingeablesPod.
If you enjoyed this episode, head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We would very much appreciate it.
Until next time. The Bingeables podcast is produced by patron Raymond G. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.